WMJC, 1360 AM, Washington Township,
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia's Renaissance Radio Station, broadcasting online at WMJC1360.com, a service of Forsyth Broadcasting.
Hi, this is Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, telling you to stay tuned to WNJC 1360 AM for Thursday in the Doghouse, coming right up.
Mama was a mutt, Daddy was one too. Me, I'm a little bit of everything, everything that I use.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of Thursday in the Doghouse, the best live talk radio show in New Jersey that specifically discusses the topic of dogs. I'm your host, Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer. I also have a co-host, Karen Fazio, and she is the dog super nanny. Karen and I are professional dog trainers, and we're both very serious about educating the dog-owning community about why dogs do the things they do. We talk about training and behavior. We interview both allopathic and homeopathic veterinarians, and we talk to shelter staff and volunteers, as well as other trainers throughout the United States and even Europe. If you're listening for the first time, let me invite you to catch up with hearing our past shows by going to my website, www.jerseydogtrainer.com, to hear all of the podcasts we've done so far. If you're at the office and you can't listen to the radio, you can hear us live on the internet. It's simple. Just go to WNJC1360.com and you'll immediately see a button that says Listen Live. Click on it. Karen won't be joining us today, so it's just me, myself, and I. We have talked about many subjects here on Thursday in the Doghouse, but a subject that we haven't talked enough about is breeding and breeders. I've chosen one of the best breeders in the United States to help educate all of us today. I have enormous respect for her, and I think that she's a great go-to person for any issue about breeding. Her name is Sharon Saxon. Sharon is a writer, journalist, TV producer, dog show judge. She breeds Champion Whippets and Brussels Griffon. She's written several books. One in particular is called Pause and Effect, The Healing Power of Dogs. We'll be back to talk with Sharon in just a moment, but please let me first tell you what services I offer here in the South Jersey area as a professional dog trainer and certified behavior consultant. Is your dog always in the doghouse? Does he greet people by jumping all over them? Does she chew your shoes and steal your undies? Guess what? Your dog needs training. Hi, I'm Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, and I train dogs using only positive-based methods. My services include private training right in your own home. I also offer group puppy kindergarten classes starting at 8 weeks of age and group classes for adolescent and adult dogs beginning at 5 months of age. All group classes are held at Dog Days Camp for Canines, 23 West Main Street, Marlton, New Jersey. For more information, please contact me at 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Again, that's 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. To Thursday in the Doghouse. I'm your host, Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer. You are now joining the best little doghouse in New Jersey. And I am going to talk with Sharon Saxon about the topic of breeding dogs. And Sharon, I'm so glad you're joining us today. We've talked before, but it's been too long. And I thought maybe we could educate people about the process of breeding and talk about, you know, so how you select dogs and things like that. How long have you been breeding Whippets and Brussels Griffon?
Over 30 years.
Oy, oy, oy. That's a long time.
As a teenager, I became very interested in this, and I've been improving my methods and working with dogs over the years, and as you know now, I'm so interested in this strong bond that humans and dogs can form.
Right, right. Well, so did somebody teach you what to do, or did you just kind of muddle through yourself and figure it out?
Combination of both. In fact, I started out with a very good mentor. My first breed was Wire Fox Terrier. I had a wonderful mentor, and anyone who gets into it, first thing you want to look for is somebody who's gone before you and can give you really good advice, because there's so much to learn if you're going to start breeding dogs.
So your mentor, did you particularly like that breed? Is that why you decided to specialize in Fox Wire Hair Terriers?
I loved that breed, and mm-hmm. I still do. But as I got older, I kind of changed. It's a very high-maintenance breed.
Right.
Terriers, as you know, they have a lot of energy.
Right.
And as I got more and more interested in training, they're not the very best one for training.
Okay.
But it's a wonderful breed. And I think, like so many people, I love so many breeds. I'd have all of them if I could.
Yeah, that would be an enormous amount of work, I think. You know,
it's what keeps you from having more and more. Right now, I have 2 Whippets and 8 Brussels Griffons. And that allows me to give each one a lot of individual attention.
Mm-hmm.
And when you talk about what you look for in a breeder, I do myself look for these kind of smaller operations.
Okay.
That I have a full-time job, but that's my hobby. Mm-hmm. But I have enough time to spend with each dog and develop it as an individual and know its health and temperament inside out. So when that puppies are produced, I know exactly what the person can expect from the puppy.
Yeah, so this is something I'd like to really delve into. At the time that you started breeding, I mean, could you have done this on your own, which a lot of people try to do? Could you have been a good breeder?
There are enough books out there, and that I suppose that you could, but I find that another human who is knowledgeable is such a huge help. And when I sell a puppy to somebody, what I'm offering them is my knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really smart of a person to take advantage of that. Because I'll just give you one simple example. I can save you hundreds of dollars on your vet bill, because there's things about a Brussels Griffon or a Whippet that might come up that you question and you might want to go to the vet. But if you call me, I can tell you, okay, between 6 to 8 months, there's a lot of heavy tearing and sniffling in the developmental process of a Brussels Griffon.
Hmm.
So that can save you a vet trip and antibiotics and everything, because I know that, but your vet doesn't even know that.
Is that right? Why doesn't the vet know that?
Because he didn't raise any Brussels Griffons. In fact, I find, and maybe you find this also, that most veterinarians that I come across don't even own dogs because they are so busy. And they don't have the time for a personal dog.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think a breeder is a very important person in a pet owner's life, somebody you can turn to. And I love when they shoot me an email question, because I can get to those real easy.
Right, right.
And answer. But a lot of times I can refer a person to a trainer or a behaviorist trainer like yourself.
Thank you.
Because they're coming up with a problem that's essentially a behavior problem. It's not a health problem.
Right, right. And vets, unfortunately, are not well educated generally in the area of behavior. They know medicine, and that's what they went to school for, is to learn medicine and to learn diagnoses of physical ailments and medications and things like that. But they're very, I would say, poorly educated in most times about behavior.
Absolutely, and they have enough to learn,
mm-hmm.
learning all about the
right.
And they should leave the whole behavior area to others.
Thank you for saying that, because really, I once in a great while I luck out and I meet a veterinarian, and I can communicate beautifully with that veterinarian because the vet has a decent amount of background in behavior, has either specialized in it or has gone off by him or herself to learn more about the behavioral issues and how best to handle them. So, you know, so that makes life very, very good for a problem dog who, you know, has a great vet and understands the theory behind behavior and learning and things like that. So we don't screw the dog up, literally.
Right. And the same thing for me. I want my puppy owners to call me and get some advice because, again, most vets in the country have never treated a Brussels Griffon or a Whippet. The two breeds I breed are not Labradors and Goldens that you see all the time.
Right.
And as you know, the more we learn about canines, the more specific to a breed some things are.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to somebody like me with expert knowledge in it, it's a big help. And I have a couple of veterinarians who call me, which I really appreciate because they don't understand certain things. Like a vet called the other day to ask if the Australian Shepherd was in the Collie family, because since I'm a judge, I have a lot of knowledge about many breeds.
Right,
The Collies are specifically allergic to. So they didn't know that either. So there's room in this dog world for all of us.
Right. And we need to depend on each other and give each other respect for the specialties that we're in. You know,
and I've been very encouraged by the specialty of behaviorists with trainers, because that's given me people now that I can refer people to.
Right.
Instead of people being confused or trying to rely on me for things I really can't help them with because I'm not at their house and I don't see what problem they're talking about.
Yeah. Well, listen, when you're breeding, if especially, let's say, take it from a beginner's viewpoint, and when I hear about, oftentimes I'll go to somebody's house and they want me to train their dog and maybe there's a little issue or two and they tell me that, you know, I really want to breed my dog, and that really sends my blood pressure soaring. Because, okay, you have this issue, and it is an important issue. Why do you want to reproduce this dog that has this temperamental flaw?
Exactly.
Really? So what is it, when you choose your breeding pairs, what would you tell people that they really need to look for or to look to in a breeding pair to know that the litter and any offspring from that breeding pair is going to make people happy rather than cause heartbreak?
Very specifically, the first thing you're going to look at is health. And no matter what breed it is, you're going to look at health. There are some dogs with more known health problems than others. And this can be found on the AVMA site. So, you know, when I say that bulldogs and boxers are those particular breeds have the most vet visits of any breed.
Right. Could you tell everybody what the AVMA is, please?
American Veterinary Medical Association.
Okay, and I'm sure they have their own website, correct?
Yes.
AVMA.com, I'm sure.
Yes.
Go ahead. Okay.
I find people very educated to this now, which is great, that they want to ask you what are the specific health problems of a breed. It doesn't mean you can't get a boxer, but you want to find a breeder who's aware of the problems and has tried to breed away from them.
Mm-hmm.
So in my own two breeds, one reason I breed these breeds are they don't have specific health problems related to the breed at this time.
So they're pretty sturdy.
They're sturdy, they're healthy, they are not vet intensive.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be running to the vet a lot. So people do ask about health, but that's the first thing. And when people call me and they say, what about health, I can tell them for 5 or 6 generations I have selected, let's take Brussels Griffons because the health problems in each are different. Mm-hmm. I've selected that they have healthy eyes, that their patellas are very strong,
mm-hmm.
That they don't have any breathing problems. So anything known about health, I've observed my little colony and I've selected for that health. There's nothing more important to owning an animal than to have a healthy one.
Right.
So that's number one. Number two, temperament. And as you say, if there are issues, I don't breed from the animals that have issues.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, some people say, oh, the Brussels Griffon is very stubborn. Well, mine are not, because I don't like a stubborn dog. I want a cooperative dog.
Right.
So it would be hard for me to have around my house if I had a really stubborn dog who wouldn't come in and go out with a group or had really strong needs. So I like a cooperative dog. So the second thing on my list is the temperament. So I'm looking for my happiest, most cooperative, people-loving dog that can really form a bond.
Mm-hmm.
And then third, I look for the physical characteristics of the breed. And I believe that we need a shift some of the breeders in the country are used to taking that physical characteristics first. And I think that has led to some of the health problems. I think we need to upside down it, say, first, I'm breeding for health. Second, I'm breeding for temperament. Third, okay, the Brussels Griffon has an upturned nose.
Right.
Okay. You know, I'll take that, but it has to already have had this no breathing problems at all and very strong in temperament.
They're sweet dogs. I have to say, they really are sweet dogs.
They're tremendously sweet, and they're a lot smarter than people realize.
Oh, they are. They're great to train. I enjoy working with them tremendously.
And I would say that if in my growth period over the 30 years I've been breeding, I have more and more respect for the intelligence of dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started out, I remember believing all the things I read, like one thing would be about housebreaking. Oh, unless you caught him in the act, you can't yell at him because he doesn't know. That's not true. They're smarter than that. My Griffons, I yell at them. If somebody did an accident, I don't even have to know which one. I point to the accident and say, that was bad. A bad dog did that. Mm-hmm. And I can tell which one did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're smart. Mm-hmm. They're very smart. And I'm encouraging my puppy owners to raise their expectations, and the dog will meet them.
Okay. So as a breeder, how many times would you breed a pair in a year?
Oh, once.
Just once.
Yeah.
Okay.
Generally, the female Brussels Griffons will come into their first heat between 7 to 10 months, and I don't breed then. I'll breed in the second heat when they're over a year and a half old.
Okay.
I like to breed a young female because she's healthy and outgoing, and after a year old, I know if she has any issues in either health or temperament.
Right, right.
And so I'll breed her once. Now, with the group that I have, I have my couple old ones that I am always going to keep. But the younger ones, I rotate. I know a lot of people don't think that's very nice to do, but after a female has two litters, I'll often find a home for her where she can be the only one, usually with one of my friends, or some people call and they're looking for an older dog.
Right.
And then she gets to spend from age 3 till the end of her life as the only dog in the pet and
in a pet household.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that? Why is that such a bad thing? I think that's a wonderful thing.
I think it's a wonderful thing. A lot of people will say to me, oh, how could you do that? But the reason I can do that is I know her life as the only dog is going to be fulfilling and rich and wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can keep her puppy and then later breed her puppy.
Right.
So that's how I... Otherwise, if I kept everyone, you know, I'd have a house full of 10-year-old dogs, and
right.
I wouldn't be able to breed at all.
Sure.
I do rotate some of my group.
Okay. So let me ask you this, too. So we're talking about responsible breeding. So everything that you're telling me, I'm hoping that people will take into account if and when they decide to get a puppy. Because here's what happens. Everybody is getting more and more familiar with the puppy mill situation. And then, still people are going there and then they kick themselves in the head, afterward because they realize they've gotten an unhealthy dog or they realize the temperament of the dog is really poor. And then they say, I knew I shouldn't have done that, but I fell in love with the dog. Well, this is what happens, you know, and then there's a lot of heartbreak and tears. So I want to stress to people that just because you may get your dog from a quote breeder unquote, doesn't necessarily mean that you've gotten that puppy from a responsible breeder, or a breeder that is really trying to improve the breed. You know, I know you. I know that you're not out to get rich from doing this. You want to improve the breed. You have an inclination toward these breeds, and you love them. So it's not something you want to ruin by mass producing them. And so I want people to make sure that they understand this.
Right.
It worries me too. Like I said, when people say, "Oh, I want to breed my dog because I want my children to have the experience of this." Oh my God, that's such a horrible reason. Don't you agree?
I think that above all, we have to put the animal's interest first.
Right.
And if you use that mindset, you wouldn't breed an unhealthy dog. You'd say, okay, my dog has this, that, or the other health issue.
Mm-hmm.
I have to neuter him. And get another dog. I'm not opposed to people breeding if they can keep that in mind, because I do see a need for wonderful, healthy pets.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there are enough in the world, actually, right now. But don't breed an unhealthy dog, and don't breed a dog with temperament issues.
Right.
Those are genetic.
Right.
They pass right on.
That's right. Health.
No, I told you that I'm staying overnight with a friend of mine who's also been one of my mentors, and she's a famous breeder of Scottish Deerhounds.
Oh, wonderful.
And she is really known for her rigorous demands on health.
Mm-hmm.
That anything at all indicating less than perfect health,
right,
she doesn't breed that dog. She
good for her. Good for her.
It and has it in a pet home rather than breed.
Mm-hmm.
And if we keep the interest of the dog, because the puppies that are born, if they're born to healthy, sociable parents, likely they'll be healthy, sociable puppies, and then they'll go on and they'll have wonderful lives.
Mm-hmm.
But anything less than that is not acceptable.
Sharon, I spoke with you on the phone when we talked about doing this interview. I mentioned that I was working with a German Shepherd adolescent. She's a year old. She's still intact. And she went through a first heat. And during that heat, she attacked her housemate. And then I started to learn more, which I knew nothing about before, that there is a situation that can cause first heat aggression. Have you run into this?
Yes. Because one thing that I have had to learn in my dealings with dogs is that those old wild instincts are still there, and sometimes they rise up and we don't expect it because we live with these dogs and they become like people to us in a way, and then they're not.
Right.
But I think behavior changes around the first heat are not at all unusual.
Okay.
And even I asked that question to my friend Norma Sellers last night too, and she was saying, well, yeah, that the hormonal changes they go through are very intense.
Yeah.
And they produce, she said, you even can see that there's a kind of confusion
mm-hmm.
in the dog.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what am I feeling? Why am I feeling this way?
Mm-hmm.
And since there are hormones for aggression and protection,
right.
we were discussing the problems that we've had with our brood bitches being overly protective,
mm-hmm.
Going out of their way to attack a female when that they usually like,
right.
because they're either very heavily pregnant or they have puppies. They do have changes.
So if let's say you have a female who is showing aggression during their heat cycle, does this eventually level itself out where the dog's behavior can go back to where it was?
In my experience, it does.
Okay.
My experience, it does. That is driven hormonally. It kicks off some instinct in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And when you consider Wolfpack studies that were done, when a queen wolf
mm-hmm.
in the den, when another wolf comes into heat, she is absolutely vicious in guarding it to make sure that she doesn't mate.
Mm-hmm.
Because she wants all the resources of the pack to go towards her puppies,
right.
not any other.
Right.
So sometimes people think, oh, dogs should just breed because if they were out in the wild, they would just breed. Well, that's not true. They would join a pack, and there would be a queen, and only she would be allowed to mate, and only her puppies, which would be the strongest and healthiest puppies, would be allowed to flourish.
Right.
So we do see these instincts coming in, and it's upsetting to both Norma and I were talking about how upset we got to see another female attack and try to get to another female's puppies.
Mm-hmm.
And when you think of your dogs as being so loving and sweet and wonderful, which they are, but then this instinct can kick in and oh my gosh, how could she do that?
Yeah, this was my first experience with a dog that went through a heat, because most of the dogs that I meet actually are spayed around 6 months old. This being a German Shepherd, you know, it takes them forever to mature mentally and physically, and the vet, kind of talked to the owners and they agreed to wait until she was about a year old. And so this is what happened. She attacked her housemate 4 times. Thankfully, there was no injuries or anything like that. It was just all a bunch of spit and noise. But still, it was scary for the owners. Very, very scary for the owners and the other dog. You know, we only have about 4 minutes left, but I want to get in another question. This is something also that I've experienced where I'll go to the home to work with a puppy, or I'll get a puppy in class, and there's something off about the puppy, either its health or its temperament. And I get told, and I can research the breeder's website, that it's a very good breeder. She's been in business a long time. Somebody could tell me that they were recommended by 2 people, who have either gotten puppies from the breeder, or they were referred by another breeder who may not have had that particular breed that they were looking for. So let's just assume that the breeder is a good quality, responsible breeder.
Mm-hmm.
However, I've seen this enough times that I'm so aware of it that sometimes it seems like when there is a first time breeding of a pair, that you can get one of the litter comes out and it's not quite right. It may have a health issue that none of the other litter has or isn't showing anyway at that time. And the breeding pair, you know, maybe the owners have met the breeding pair and they're friendly dogs. They're great dogs. Have you ever experienced that in your own litters? Or how about your friend Norma? I mean, maybe she could say whether or not she's ever had a first time breeding that may have produced something that you didn't expect.
I think that it's possible anytime. And, you know, I've told you about the rigorous selection quality that I go through.
Right.
But it is possible to have one that doesn't behave the way that you expect.
All right. So you could be breeding a pair for 2 or 3 times, or, well, you usually do it, what, twice? You said once.
Well, when you say pair, I have a champion dog who I think is absolutely just the most wonderful Brussels Griffon in temperament, health, and every way. So I'll breed each of my females to him.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, for the second breeding, unless I absolutely thought each one was perfect, generally I'll look for another stud dog to use to see what else could be produced. But if I did repeat the breeding, I would expect to get the same good quality I got the first time.
Right.
I think what you're talking about is quite random, that there can be just some genetic makeup. I never spoke to Norma about Scottish Deerhounds, which she breeds, in that regard, but she did tell me about a poodle litter where a poodle came out and did not have the personality of the other poodles, and it was so shocking.
Mm-hmm.
She had standard poodles. They were absolutely reliable, and one came out and it was different. And, and we were just saying, you know, there's things we can't predict.
Right. And also I tell my clients too, we are not clones of one another. Dogs are not clones of each other either. Everybody is an individual. But, you know, when it comes to like a genetic, thing where something's inherent, whether it's health or behavior, you kind of wonder, you know, what happened here? But, you know, this is nature and we can't argue with nature.
I do think that the socialization and the environment is a huge part of it.
Yeah, definitely.
A very huge part of it, and that's why we need you. But there are these there are some genetic components to it, and I feel terrible sometimes when I see somebody like you mentioned who did all the research and they still seem to end up with a dog that isn't quite right.
Right. I know. It can happen. Well, listen, I can't thank you enough for talking with us this morning. This half hour flew by.
It did.
And it's not fair. So, listen, I would love for you to come back, and I would certainly invite your friend Norma if she ever wants to do a radio interview. We need all the education we can get around here.
Sure.
About breeds and breeding, and I would love to talk to both of you. So thank you so much. And I also want to remind people that Sharon has a book out, and it's a great book. I've read it. It's called The Healing Power of, Pause and Effect, The Healing Power of Dogs. I'm sure you can get it at DogWise or Amazon.com. And listen, Sharon, we got to get together again and do this again.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much, and you all have a great day. Talk to you later, everybody.
I'm glad you're home, but where you've been? Since 2 o'clock, I've been holding it in. Grab the leash, let's go chop chop. If I don't get out soon.